Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 13, The Dynasty of Maharaj Nimi, Text Number 6. Idyutsasarja swam deham. Nimiradyatma kovida. Mitra varunayor jagne. Parvasyam pratitamaha. Translation. After seeing this, Maharaj Nimi, who is expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Or after saying this, Maharaj Nimi, who is expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, gave up his body. Vishistha, the great-grandfather, also gave up his body also, but through the semen discharged by Mitra and Varuna, when they saw Urvashi, he was born again. Purport. Mitra and Varuna chanced to meet Urvashi, the most beautiful prostitute of the heavenly kingdom, and they became lusty. Because they were great saints, they tried to control their lust, but they could not do so, and thus they discharged semen. This semen was kept carefully in a water pot, and Vashistha was born from it. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutai Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Vracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Satarna. Urvashi is mentioned here. She's not an ordinary lady. When Narayan was rishis, were undergoing penances and austerities to show the world how to undergo penance and austerities. So at that time, Indra became, as usual, a little fearful that perhaps Narayani wanted to become Indra, take his position. So he sent Cupid, along with many of the angelic apsaras, to deviate Narayana from their austerities. But they couldn't do so. Narayana was fixed in his meditation, or their meditation. And eventually Cupid shot arrows, but they were completely ineffective. So therefore they became very fearful that if Narayana get angry, we're going to be burnt to ashes. Happens to a few of the apsaras once in a while. It happened to Cupid also. Shiva got angry at Cupid when he was trying to disturb his meditation, and he also burnt him to ashes, and he became Pradyumna in his next lifetime. In any case, Narayana wasn't disturbed even by Cupid and the apsaras, and instead he manifested from his body different heavenly damsels, much more beautiful than the damsels that were sent to bewilder him. Therefore, they all realize that it's useless trying to bewilder Narayana, because he can manifest beauties thousands of times or millions of times more beautiful than they were. And one of them was Urvashi, which Narayana gave to Indra for his heavenly kingdom as a gift. And here that same Urvashi chanced to meet Mitra or Varuna, and Mitra chanced to meet Urvashi. So we shouldn't think that this is just some ordinary apsara. This is a special apsara created by Narayana. And we shouldn't think Mitra and Varuna were very exalted personalities within the universe, highly responsible persons. Varuna is in charge of all the oceans, and there's a lot of oceans in the universe. And Mitra is one of the demigods in charge of I guess he's in charge of, what is Mitra in charge of?
Evacuation.
I think urination.
Evacuation.
Oh, evacuation. Okay. Anyhow, it's quite a job. You don't want to get on his bad side. But there's a limit by how tolerant one can be. One spiritual advancement can be judged by one's tolerance. Just like Bhrigu Muni, he was in a conference, a seminar held by the sages, and they were trying to decide who was actually the topmost person in the universe. They weren't going to decide just by reading some books and coming to some theoretical judgment. They actually wanted to go and test the different personalities in the universe to see directly who is the most elevated. And their criteria for the most elevated person in the universe was their tolerance. And they appointed Bhrigu Muni. So Bhrigu Muni went to his father's house, Brahmaloka, and when Lord Brahma came running out to greet him with open arms, Bhrigu Muni said, "Don't touch me." So Bhrigu Muni didn't offer any respects, he didn't offer any greetings to his father. So his father saw that Bhrigu Muni has become very disrespectful, and he became very angry. But because Lord Brahma's anger was checked by his great intelligence, it was compared to water checking fire. Bhrigu didn't wait around. He immediately went to Shiva Loka, Kailas, and there when his brother came to greet him, Lord Shiva, Bhrigu said, "Actually, stand away from me. I don't want to touch you. You're covered with ashes. You're associated with snakes and hobgoblins. Don't get near me. I don't want to become contaminated." So this Lord Shiva was insulted. And he also became angry. And he was going to take his trident and more or less pierce Bhrigu Muni's body with it until Parvati fell down before Lord Shiva and asked for Lord Shiva to forgive his brother. And Bhrigu also left there immediately, didn't want to wait around. And he came to Swetadweep, where he entered into the Vaikuntha planet that Lord Vishnu is living in. He walked into the palace where Lord Vishnu is and walked up to Lord Vishnu, who was lying on a bed, his feet were being massaged by Lakshmi Devi, and immediately kicked him in the chest. Obviously, Lakshmi wasn't very happy about it, but immediately Lord Vishnu got up from his bed, paid his respects to Bhrigu, sat Bhrigu on the bed and started to massage his feet, asking for forgiveness that he didn't notice him coming into the palace. He should have offered respects immediately, and that he was very unhappy that Bhrigu's foot may have been hurt by touching his hard chest. And in order to relieve the pain of kicking him, Lord Vishnu was massaging his feet. And he said that now that a Brahmin has come to my palace, my Vaikuntha planet, now I know it's become purified. And now that you've lotus foot has touched my thunderbolt-like chest, now I'm sure that my chest has become purified, and now the goddess of fortune will be happy to live there. So Bhrigu was completely bewildered because he understood Lord Vishnu's position. And he thought, how wonderful, here is the greatest personality. I've committed the greatest offense possible by kicking him with my feet, with my foot. And instead of retaliating, he's massaging my foot. So how merciful is Lord Vishnu? And he went to tell the sages, so let's say he got a unanimous vote. That is the topmost personality. But we can imitate Lord Vishnu. I mean, that great position is really reserved for Lord Vishnu. Of course, we find personalities like Haridas Thakur or Prahlad Maharaj. Haridas Thakur is said to be an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. Now, whether he's directly Prahlad Maharaj or he's manifesting the potency of Prahlad Maharaj, and that was shown when he was being beaten in 22 marketplaces without any complaining. As a matter of fact, when his tormentors were begging him to die, because otherwise the Nawab would become angry with him, or the Qazi would become angry with him, and they'd be punished. So Haridas Thakur said, "Well, if you want me to die, I can't disappoint you." So immediately he fainted in trance. So they thought he was dead and threw him into the Ganges. They thought, he's not worthy. They took him to the Qazi. The Qazi said, he's not worthy of a burial. I guess in the Muslim culture, that you can burial is considered to be a blessing. And therefore they took Haridas Thakur and threw him into the Ganges. You're not worthy as to be a Muslim. So they threw him in, they gave him the Hindu burial, threw him into the Ganges. Of course, he floated down the river, came out of his trance, and then walked back, and everyone was amazed that he's risen from the dead, and even the Qazi had to offer him respect. And in any case, his tolerance was exhibited by persons like Haridas Thakur, not only when he was beaten, but also when Maya Devi, either in that prostitute that Ramachandra Khan sent, or even Maya Devi herself came to allure him. The prostitute became a devotee, and Maya personified, or Maya, she became a devotee of Lord Krishna and began to chant Hare Krishna. She was initiated by Haridas Thakur. Therefore, those who are completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, like Haridas Thakur or Vishnu himself, that they can tolerate any kind of problems or allurements. Guru Napi Vichalyate, 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions that those who are actually Yatra paramate chitam nirudam yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashanatmanitushati. That state of perfection is called trance or samadhi, when one's mind is completely restrained from all material mental activities by the practice of yoga. So the question is, how do we do that? There's the mechanical process of doing it, but there is actually process. It is not going to the local gym and taking a yoga class. That's not the process. I'm not against taking classes at the local gym, but that's for your physical health. It's not going to restrain your mind from mental disturbance very easily. But there is a process: yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and finally your mind becomes a little bit more peaceful in samadhi, or becomes peaceful in samadhi. But it can't be executed in a local gym. You have to go to a secluded place and lay kusha grass on the ground and cover it with a deer skin. The seat shouldn't be too high or too low. It should be situated in a sacred place. Then one has to fix the mind, becoming free from all kinds of disturbing things like sex life and fear, whatever. You can't sit there and worry about a snake coming up to bite you. And you can't think of the girlfriend you left behind. It just won't work. And if you don't leave that girlfriend behind, and you're trying to meditate in the middle of a forest nowadays with a picture of your girlfriend in your wallet, then the result is that you'll be fearful. Someone is going to hunt in the jungle. They'll think I'm an animal and they'll shoot me. You won't be able to meditate. But Krishna says that state of perfection is called trance of samadhi, when one's mind is completely restrained from all material mental activities by the practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self within the self. So that's perfection of yoga, to actually see Paramatma within the self. And it's not an imagination. And in that trance, Krishna says, one is situated in the highest transcendental happiness. It is not that simply I'm meditating on Paramatma, you know, thinking about what Paramatma can do for me, and maybe, you know, I can get some mystic power now, and I can become very great, and I'm a great yogi. No, the symptom is great transcendental happiness, ecstasy. And Gurunapi Vichalite, even in the greatest difficulty, one will not become disturbed. The happiness is so great that nothing will disturb one. If I'm simply meditating on a picture of Lord Vishnu or Paramatma, or even meditating on the form of Paramatma, but I'm not experiencing transcendental ecstasy, then eventually I'll just be waiting around for some apsara to come by and recognize what a great yogi I am. So that ecstasy, that higher taste, is what ultimately protects one from all different difficulties. That even in the greatest difficulty, one is not disturbed. Gruna pi vichalyate tam vidya tukadot. See. Yatra paramite chitam nirudam yoga sevaya yatra chevatmanatmanam pashanatmani tushati sukham adyanti kan yatat buddhigrayam itindriyam vediyatra nachayvyam sitas chalati tatvataha tam lavat. Chapalam lavam magnite nadikam tata. And one thinks that upon gaining this, there's no greater gain. It's not that one gains something, one goes to Krishna, and one is still hankering for something. No, unless one is completely satisfied, one is not Krishna conscious. No greater gain. Yam lava chapalam lavam magnite nadikam tata. Yasmin sito nadukena kruna pi vichalyate. Tam vidya dukasam yogam vi yogam yogasam gitaha. This is declared to be the highest professional stage. By gaining this, one thinks that there is no greater gain. Even the greatest difficulty, one is not disturbed. This is the professional stage of Krishna consciousness. And of course, the verses don't end there. But this is the basics. But if we're not fully conscious of Krishna, like Haridasa Thakura, we can expect that under certain circumstances, our material desires are going to be provoked. Or they're going to appear. Because for most of us, they're always there. We just don't recognize, we don't always are conscious of the fact that they're material desires. Sometimes we think they're spiritual desires when they're actually just mundane. In any case, desires will manifest themselves. Whether we fall victim to them depends upon our level of attachment to them. In any case, here we find Varuda and Mitra, although they're greatly elevated devotees, they met their match with orbicy. And although unwillingly, or at least they tried to control their senses, still their material desires, their were too strong, and they were not even by trying to voluntarily control their senses. Their senses, the urges of the senses, could pass their spiritual power. And therefore, they had some difficulty. What to speak of ourselves? We're not even aware of the demigods, practically speaking. What to speak of having any of their ability? Therefore, we should try to arrange our Krishna consciousness movement in such a way as to minimize the disturbances. Generally, it's not advised that the ladies in the Hare Krishna movement try to become attractive as orvasi. Or at least, there's some, the Vedic culture, we could say, was made in such a way is that there was some division in like the brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So there was some etiquette, divisions, and there was some way of relating. And under different circumstances. For instance, a woman, socially speaking, she may be like a mother sometimes. But in other circumstances with her husband, she may have a completely different mood and way of acting. But not that there's only one way of acting, that sometimes we get it all wrong. That with the people on the outside, sometimes the ladies act just like very, sometimes aggressively, unnecessarily. And with her husband, they act like the mother. So this is not exactly, it won't work out. It's rasa basa. The right rasa has to be there. When to counsel the husband, when to enliven the husband in different ways, when to act like a mother, like that. So these abilities have to be understood and used appropriately. Similarly, a man has to know when to be the protector, when to be the aggressor, when to be have different moods at different times and act differently, appropriately under different circumstances. So that was the Vedic culture, teaches us how to keep society peaceful and at the same time progressive. But sometimes things, even in the universe, don't work out the way they should work out under different circumstances. But then we shouldn't criticize Mitra or Varuna, thinking that Mitra and Varuna are just like ordinary persons. They have the same problems we have. We can't imagine what kind of problems we have, we would have had if we were under the same circumstances. So normally, such exalted personalities, they know how to act appropriately, and they behave appropriately, and they don't have such difficulties, but under extraordinary circumstances, sometimes things like this happen. But this is not very good for us to criticize them, even mentally, or without understanding the philosophy, we're going to have our doubts about them. Even if we're not consciously aware of how we're criticizing these persons, that's probably even worse than being aware of how actually we're demeaning these great demigods, thinking that they're just like ordinary persons like we are. Therefore, we should understand these things also very clearly and understand what the circumstances are to the best we can, because we can't understand. We, first of all, we have never seen, at least I've never seen, a picture of Urvashi. These personalities don't come to the planet, this planet at least, anymore. Therefore, we have no idea what they're talking about. Nor do we know Varuna or Mitra. On the other hand, we do have examples when Lord Brahma became attracted to his daughter, and Lord Brahma is the creator of the whole universe, empowered to create a universe, but some demigods became abhorred when they saw that, and just by that mental criticism of Lord Brahma, they had to take birth as the sons of Hiranyakashipu. And later on, they were killed one after another by Kamsa. Of course, ultimately, they were reinstated in the position of demigods by the mercy of Devaki. They were not ordinary persons, and there was some reason for them to be abhorred, but they had to go through some difficulty for some lifetimes because of their criticism of Lord Brahma. So we may say this sounds rather unfair, but we should be warned that we should know the philosophy so that we minimize our tendency towards this type of unnecessary criticism. We're able to adjust ourselves accordingly. Because on the other hand, if someone is given a position and they do something wrong repeatedly, then this verse, Prabhupada says, apichad sudaratro bhajante mama nanyabhak sadoreva samantavyak samyagvyavyasti tohisaha, that even if one commits the greatest sinful activity, that if he's a devotee, then he shouldn't be criticized. He said to be properly situated. But then Prabhupada writes in the purport that There are social responsibilities, and we're trying to elevate ourselves spiritually. And that includes Mitra and Varuna. They're also, they have their duties, and they have their desire for spiritual elevation. But sometimes in certain circumstances, these things conflict with one another, and there may be some difficulty in the spiritual sphere or even the material sphere. But what, such a person shouldn't be criticized. But on the other hand, if one's is engaged in devotional service, but repeatedly one is falling down, then one should be understood as not being a high devotee. It's not that I can do any kind of nonsense and then claim I'm a devotee, and therefore everyone should forgive me because I'm a devotee. No, one should understand, yes, this person's a devotee, but he's not a high devotee, and therefore, just like in the nectar of instruction, then we should understand how to deal with different devotees accordingly. Those who are actually very advanced, we can learn from them how we can advance. Those who are on the same level that we're on, more or less, we should cooperate with them to spread Krishna consciousness and engage in devotional service. And for those who are having difficulty following the principles or have no desire to do so, but yet are engaged in devotional service in some way, then we should respect them within our minds, but not associate with them so intimately. On the other hand, persons like Mitra and Varuna, it's not described that they were having, their life was one problem after another. This was a unique incident in the history of the universe, practically speaking. And the result wasn't bad, because the result was that great sage Varuna took advantage and was born as a result of that. Just like we find in the history that there was a great sage, Parasara Muni, and he was in a boat with a beautiful damsel. What was her name again? Satyavrati. And more or less, in the middle of the boat, he proposed to her, let's have a romantic affair. Now, it's not expected the father of great sage as Parasara Muni will decide to have a romantic affair in the middle of a lake with a fisherman's daughter. But he was a great astrologer, and he knew this was the most opportune moment to produce a child like Srila Vyasadeva for the betterment of the universe. And therefore he made the proposal. And it was accepted by her, because that was the culture. And therefore the result was that Vyasadeva was born. So Prabhupada said, if such a union is there, and the result is someone like Vyasadeva, who can complain? So one has to use one's intelligence. But it's not the standard. Sages inviting young ladies out to the middle of the lake in a boat and then proposing to them. This is not an example for that standard. It's not an example. It's some other example. So one should understand the circumstances as clearly as possible, so one will not imitate great personalities and therefore actually become fallen. Okay, so we'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I just wanted to ask this young girl that gave birth to Srila Vyasadeva. She later became the wife of Bhishma's father.
Yes.
And then
Shantanu.
And she gave birth to another son.
No, I don't think she. Well. Vichitravirya.
Pardon?
Vichitravirya.
And he gave up his body, did he not?
Yeah, he died. He left his body. I think he had like tuberculosis or something.
That's when Bhishma Dev was asked to take over the kingdom, but he refused to do so, I think, wasn't it?
Right. Bhishma Dev, he brought to Vichitravirya, he brought different ladies for marriage. And sometimes it didn't work out so well. Well, he got Ambika and others. They became his wives, but he died early, so there was no son, and therefore his Satyavati, she called her son Vyasadeva to produce children from those three ladies. And one of them closed their eyes, and therefore Dhritarashtra was born. One of them became very fearful, and therefore Pandu was born. And one of them became very accepting, and therefore Vidura was born. Yes.
What is this? You said Hridayastakura was Lord Pralhad Maharaj?
He said to be an incarnation.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I also heard that Hridayastakura is Lord Brahma. And
combined incarnation of Lord Brahma. Because Lord Brahma had committed an offense and he wanted to, when he stole the cows and the cowherd boys, and therefore to come down, he came down as Haridas Thakur in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. But he's also manifested the mentality of Prahlad Maharaj by tolerating the whippings and whatever else and Maya's allurements.
And Vasudev Datta is Prahlad Maharaj?
Yeah, also, I mean, whether it's actually the soul called Prahlad Maharaj or they're manifesting the qualities and therefore they're considered incarnations of that potency, that I'm not really so sure of. But this is from in the Gauragana Desha Deepika, so. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. Oh.